Spring is here, and if your backyard isn't ready, now's the time. At Sullivan Hardware and Garden, we've got everything you need. Grills, patio furniture, and fresh plants arriving daily. So step into spring and come see us today.
Only the best run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it. He has won his fourth Indianapolis 500.
Beyond the Bricks with Jake Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store. On 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Hey, good evening to you. We once again thank Quality Supply and Tool for allowing us to gather inside the Hensley Legal Group Command Center. It happens. Hire Hensley. Landon Coons putting it all together for us. My name is Jake Query. Mike Thompson here as well. And, of course, it is not yet the month of May, but it is in spirit. We may not have turned the calendar just yet, but that does not mean that we are not already thinking about the 110th running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. Yesterday, we went out and, of course, kind of shook down the car talking about Jim Herdebees and getting our sea legs out from underneath us in terms of getting set for another season of Beyond the Bricks. And, Mike, I know tonight we're excited about it, not just because we now, you know, we're starting to feel the paces of the car a little bit here, but in addition to that, getting to talk tonight about one of the more popular drivers, a true Hoosier that has run the Indianapolis 500, and one I know that you get asked a lot about when talking about subject matters for Beyond the Bricks.
Yeah, it's interesting because last year at the memorabilia show, a gentleman came up to me and said, you know, how come you guys don't talk about Gary Bettenhausen more? And I said, that's actually a good topic. Let's put that on the list for next year. So here, I wish I'd have gotten his name so we could have shouted him out. But here it is. Gentleman who mentioned him at the memorabilia show. We're going to be talking about Gary Bettenhausen tonight.
Gary Bettenhausen led 138 laps in the course of his Indianapolis 500-mile race career, over 21 starts. That puts him, I should say, within the top 50 of lap leaders in the history of the Speedway, and comes from, obviously, a great racing family. His brother Tony racing in the Indianapolis 500. His brother Merle, a beloved figure in racing in and around Indianapolis. And, of course, the son of the great Melvin Eugene Tony Bettenhausen, a champion driver who lost his life at the Speedway in 1961. Gary Bettenhausen talked to Tom Carnegie in 1981 about the influence that his father had on Gary as a man and racer.
Of course, we all know Gary Bettenhausen is a driver, but you do a lot of work on your own car, don't you?
For the most part.
Yes, I think, well, this goes back to when I lived on the farm, and my dad brought me up that way. My dad was very mechanically inclined. He built several of his own race cars and worked on them, and it was the way I was brought up. At 8 years old, I could weld.
Speaking of your dad, Tony, how old were you when he lost his life at Indianapolis?
I was 19, and my brother Merle was 17. And at that time, we were farming 800 acres.
In Illinois?
Yes, we were leasing about 700 and some acres, and we continued to farm for 2 years after my dad's death, and then I got into racing, and my brother Merle went into the service. So there wasn't any time to farm from there on, so we more or less got out of it.
Did your father's influence just give you a definite resolve to get into his sport?
No. I admired my father, and I was very proud of him, and I think that's probably, I wanted to be like him. You know, if you have a successful father and a son is proud of him, you want to be just like him. And he was so popular with all the fans, and I was just very proud of him, and I wanted to be like him.
You know, Mike, interesting, because Gary Bettenhausen, even though we know and think about so much of his open wheel racing career, reality is he drove more than just Indy cars. As a matter of fact, he started in stock cars and not necessarily the open wheel variation.
Yeah, that's correct. He got his feet wet in stock cars, and then he actually later drove in NASCAR a little bit, had a few NASCAR starts. So diverse career, another one of those guys who had a diverse career doing a lot of different things back in those days. So it's always fun to talk about guys like that, guys who, you know, drove in stock cars, drove in Indy cars, you know, had careers that we can look back at and say, you know, I saw him at DuCoin, and I also saw him in the Daytona 500.
Gary Bettenhausen, in his own words on running stock cars.
Your first racing venture, stock cars.
Four of us got together, put our money together, and went out and bought a car right off the showroom floor. Took it back to the place where I worked. And every night after I'd finished my regular job, we'd go to work on a stock car and work till 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. In fact, many a night I slept there and built a car. And my first race was in 63 here at Indianapolis at the Yankee 300 on the road course.
Raceway Park.
And I was pretty proud of myself. I qualified 14th right next to Roger Ward, yeah. And he was driving, a factory Mercury. It was a Straup team. And I was up to 7th at one time in the race before I had mechanical problems. So, you know, I felt
good.
Well,
start, sure.
I was pretty happy. Yeah. And then later on that season, I ran 2nd to A.J. Foyt at the fairgrounds on the 1 mile dirt track here in Indianapolis. So, you know, I was happy. And then the following 2 years were disasters. I was in the fence more than I was on a racetrack. So,
Foyt, you mentioned, Roger Ward. I think Joe Leonard ran Bernardley Jones, yeah, in the stock cars. Were they a good influence on you?
Nationally, it was an honor to be able to race, yeah, with those, that caliber of driver, and I think it did. Nationally, the more you're around professionals, the more you want to be like them.
In the late 1960s, Gary Bettenhausen made his debut at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Mike, this is a great piece of audio because, as you know, and we have heard so many times on Beyond the Bricks, when drivers finally broke through and got their chance at IMS, typically it means that they were interviewed, and we have audio of it, at some point by either Sid Collins or the other voice that is synonymous with IMS, Mike. And that is some pretty cool sound here with Tom Carnegie, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. This is actually an interview from 1981 where he talks about, you know, his first experiences at IMS. And then after that, we have a little bit of a clip from 1968 when Gary drops out of his first Indianapolis 500.
So here is Gary Bettenhausen from 1981 talking to Tom Carnegie.
Then I went there with Joe Hunt and his dirt car, which the car actually was obsolete about 15 years before that, I guess.
Of course it was, sure.
So, but I felt that it was an opportunity to at least get to Indianapolis, and I'd try to make the best of it. I went there and I took the first three phases of my rookie test, and I managed to run over 150 miles an hour in the dirt car. Then I couldn't run fast enough to get through my last phase, so J.C. Agajanian asked me if I'd like to finish my test in his rear engine car, which is a car that Parnelli drove a couple of years before that. And naturally, I took the opportunity and finished my test. Then, shortly after that, is when Art Pollard left Fred Gerhardt and went with the STP team.
So,
yes. So Gerhardt hired me, gave me a chance to drive the car, and I made the race in that car, and we only lasted about 40 laps in the race. That's when Al Unser hit the wall in the first turn, and I ran over a bunch of the debris that came off of his car and practically tore the bottom out of my race car. So that was the start of my bad luck at Indianapolis.
Gary Bettenhausen would ultimately make his Indianapolis 500 debut in the race itself in 1968. The Thermo King Auto air conditioning special, that was an offie, of course, and he would start 22nd, finish the race in 24th.
Out of the north pit, here's Chuck Marlowe.
And with me up here, sir, is Gary Bettenhausen. Gary, you said that you were involved in a little bit in Al's spin down there. Can you tell the fans back in Finley Park about it?
Well, Chuck, I followed Al Unser into the corner, and something broke on his race car, and he hit the wall. And there was metal flying all over the racetrack. And a large piece of metal went underneath my race car and tore the oil tank open and tore the bottom of the race car open. So it's definitely put us out.
Are you okay?
Yeah, Yes, I'm fine. I got a sore foot from where the metal hit underneath the race car, but other than that, everything's okay.
Gary, thank you very much. Good luck to you next year.
Thank you.
Gary Bettenhausen, now back to you, said the tower.
Well, we're certainly sorry to hear about that one because that's a great name in racing, but he's had some experience now and will be back.
Mike, obviously race car drivers form friendships even with rivalry. Sometimes they find drivers that they can identify with because they may have something in common of their backstory. For Gary Bettenhausen, perhaps that connection of knowing what it was like to be that second generation driver is the reason that he developed a special friendship with Bill Vukovic II.
Yeah, it's interesting because when you look at pictures of the two of them, they were kind of inseparable for many, many years. And you look at pictures of the two of them, and I always think about the fact that these are two people who really have something in common. Not only were they second generation drivers, who there was a lot of pressure on them because their fathers had been big superstars, but both of their fathers had lost their lives at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So, you know, you have to wonder, you know, what kind of pressure was on both of these people to live up to the family name, if you will. So it's not surprising that Gary Bettenhausen and Bill Vukovic II would become friends. But actually, in an interview on the Talking Gasoline Alley that he did with Kevin Calabro in the late 1970s, Bill Vukovic II said actually they weren't friends right away.
Well, I didn't like Gary a long time ago. We weren't very good friends when we first started racing. Right? It was a rivalry, and we ran real close, and we banged wheels on a few occasions. And one night at Manzanita Speedway, we got into a pretty bad wreck, and I think we finally worked in and decided we better become friends because it was a violent accident. Nobody got hurt, but somebody could have, and it was a push and shove type deal, and nobody was willing to give. And from that day on, I had a lot of respect for Gary, and I think he's got a lot of respect for me. And then after the respect was earned for each other, we became very close friends. Gary's one of my best friends now.
When we come back, I had mentioned that Gary Bettenhausen is within the top 50 of all-time lap leaders in the Indianapolis 500-mile race, and that all came in one big chunk in one race that kind of got away. We'll let you hear what I'm talking about when we return to Beyond the Bricks.
Don't miss Renewal by Andersons one-month-only sale event. Buy one replacement window or door and get the second 40% off. Plus, enjoy zero down, no payments, and zero interest for 12 months. It's the perfect time to upgrade with windows engineered for strength, beauty, and energy-efficient performance. Designed for Florida's unique climate, our Acclaim Impact windows help keep your home cooler, quieter, and more comfortable. Offer ends April 30th. Restrictions apply. Schedule your free consultation at bestwindowsflorida.com. License CGC 152.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Beyond the Bricks with Jake Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Inside the Hensley Legal Group Command Center. It happens. Hire Hensley. Jake Query along with Mike Thompson taking a look back tonight on Beyond the Bricks on the great Gary Bettenhausen, veteran of 21 Indianapolis 500-mile races, and of course his family, a staple. Not just on the west side of Indianapolis, not just in Monrovia, Indiana, but the Speedway itself. Mike, I'll be honest, this is one of those episodes that because it came from essentially listener request, then I think to myself, I don't know why we didn't do this before, because certainly Gary Bettenhausen, one of the real good guys that we've seen over the course of the time at IMS.
Oh, absolutely. A great guy, always willing to share his knowledge, share his passion of racing. I got the chance to talk to him a couple times and got a couple of autographs from him over the years before his sad passing. And yeah, it's funny that I looked at it when the gentleman mentioned, hey, you guys should do something on Gary Bettenhausen. I was thinking, oh, we've done him several times. Then I looked and we hadn't. So I'm glad we're doing it tonight.
We mentioned and we heard from the fact that Gary Bettenhausen's career began in 1968 in terms of his runs at the Indianapolis 500. He would return in 69, 70, and 71, but things really started to look up for him in 1972. That was his best ride at the Speedway when he became a teammate of Mark Donohue at Team Penske. He would lead 138 laps in that 1972 Indianapolis 500, but an ignition failure would drop him out just 25 laps from the finish.
Okay, number four, and Jim Shelton.
Oh, you wouldn't believe it, but hard luck has apparently hit number seven there. He went by here very slowly, and I believe he will probably be down in the south chute right now.
Pick him up, Patty Bell.
All right, we were trying to reach you. The last two laps that Gary Bettenhausen has gone by, his engine is extremely sour. We took our headset off to get a closer listen, as we're only about 50 feet away from him, and his engine is sour, and he's up the backstretch now, but he is not at racing speed. Back to the tower.
How's he doing as he comes up to three? Can you pick him up, Ron?
He went by me just a moment ago, Sid, and that engine is quite sour. And as you may have guessed, Jerry Grant passed him here on three just about two laps ago. Sid?
Okay, well, watch him as he comes by here. I want to check the 170 laps of 425 miles. See Krizloff going out. We'll watch for Gary. And there he goes by, and you're certainly right. How much would you say he's slowed down, Len?
I would say that he's running about 90 miles an hour, just about yellow lap speed. And I would think that a turbocharger has gone out. That's usually what happens when you slow down to about that speed. A turbocharger, which takes the bulk of the power away, and it's actually running on about 100 horsepower right now.
You can imagine the disappointment for Bettenhausen after starting inside of the front two rows. Matter of fact, he started fourth in that 1972 race. And it was 9 years later in that interview that he did with Tom Carnegie, where even nearly a decade after that dropout in 1972, you could tell the disappointment was still there.
Driving for Roger Penske, 1972, you really had the race won. All of a sudden, out of competition, that must have been tough to swallow.
The Bettenhausen name has been at Indianapolis for so long, and we've had bad luck there.
Yeah,
my dad only finished, I think, three or four races in 14, and as you know, I've only finished one out of 12, so it hasn't been our best racetrack. Well, I led it, like you said, 138 laps total, and when the engine broke, I coasted to a stop in the third turn, so I pulled off down into the grass and got out of the car, and about 15 spectators jumped the fence and started running over me, and every one of them had a beer.
Yeah.
And they were all patting me on the back, and that made it worse, you know.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And then when they towed the car in, I got a applause from every section of the grandstand, and it meant a lot to me.
Mike, we talked earlier about the fact that, you know, Gary Bettenhausen, one of those that was willing to run really anything, right? If it had wheels, he was going to drive in it. And the reality is that desire, that insistence to an extent of running things beyond just IndyCar participation became kind of a bone of contention between himself and the captain, Roger Penske.
Oh, 100%. He got injured at Toledo Speedway, of all places, in my hometown in 1972, near the end of the season, and had to miss races. And Roger Penske had basically told him, you're going to stop running the sprint cars or you're going to be out of a job. And Gary Bettenhausen at the time was one of those guys who was, you know, I'm not going to get told to do anything, basically. And so they were butting heads about that. And so he went through 1973, and they were still kind of butting heads about it. And then in 1974, he had another really bad crash. This one much worse than the one in Toledo. He had a crash at Syracuse that basically not only changed his life, but it changed his career. I mean, he lost the use of his left arm effectively for the rest of his life. So it was a huge, huge situation. And he talked to Tom Carnegie in an interview in 1981 about how that crash happened.
We had a problem with the turning radius in the race car. We'd made a bunch of changes in the car, and the car would only had about 40% turning radius. And I knew about it, but when I got on the racetrack was so fast, it was what you call a perfect racetrack.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And naturally, you know, the first lap felt so good, I had to try a little bit harder the second lap. And
so I was like that.
I pitched the car into the first turn a little bit too hard, and when the car got sideways, I didn't have enough turning radius to correct it or to stay with it. So the car started to go into a big long slide, and the track was so heavy and tacky that the car just dug in and turned over, and it flipped about 8 times in like 3 seconds. And the centrifugal force is what broke my collarbones and did all the nerve damage.
Safety belt, did it help, did it? Or I remember something about a safety belt.
I'm still here,
yeah.
Put it that way. So it, I don't know if I'd be here if I hadn't had my shoulder harnesses hooked, but at that time we were only using 2-inch wide shoulder harnesses. Uh-huh. And like I said, the centrifugal force tried to throw me out of the car so bad that the shoulder harnesses are what broke my collarbone.
I see. Okay.
So
that was it. You were in the hospital in Syracuse, New York for a couple of weeks, brought back to Indianapolis Community Hospital for a long time. But it was really nerve problems that caused the main damage.
Yes, that was really my only, other than a few broken ribs and,
yes,
and a shoulder blade, a few other broken bones.
Eyes, I remember those.
A crooked nose.
Gary, show me your arm. I just want you to show that how much progress that you've had since then. And what's amazing to me is the fact that you continue to show progress. Damaged nerves, that, to me, that's it. But you just keep coming back stronger and stronger.
Well, I work at it every morning, and
you do.
When nobody's around, I do my little secret exercises.
Well, you must have a secret.
But it's mainly because I want to win more races, and
well, you've got power now. Show me where your power is.
Well, I've got a super good grip,
uh-huh,
which,
yeah,
comes from this muscle in the bottom of your arm, but I don't have, well, I guess it's called wrist extensor.
Uh-huh.
I can't straighten my hand out, which,
uh-huh,
but probably the reason they haven't come back is because I don't use them enough in racing. Like when I first got back into racing, I hardly had any grip at all. In fact,
mm-hmm,
I would sew Velcro in the palm of my glove,
yes,
and then put the other part of the Velcro on the steering wheel. That would hold my hand on the steering wheel,
mm-hmm,
so that it wouldn't fall off. But originally I had nothing from my shoulder down. It just,
yes,
if I wanted to move it, I had to do it this,
yes,
way. But all my shoulder muscles have come back, and my bicep is gradually coming back, and that's the reason I can't lift my hand. But I'll guarantee you, a year from now, it'll be as good as this one.
Gary Bettenhausen had won the USAC Sprint Car Championship in 1969, 1971, but as you just heard now, of course, the accident by the time you get to 1974. And Roger Penske had told Bettenhausen to give up the sprint cars. And now, after that second major injury, this time, as Mike had mentioned, you know, costing Bettenhausen the use of his left arm, Roger Penske had had enough, and he fired Gary Bettenhausen.
I've heard it said that if you weren't so devoted to sprint car racing, that you'd be with the Chaparral or with the teams that are winning, you know, on the circuit, on the Champ Car circuit. How do you view that thought that's been expressed?
Without a doubt, that's probably the biggest mistake in my career, is probably not listening to Roger Penske,
yes,
financially. But I'm not saying that I'd be any happier today if,
yeah,
I had listened to him. I probably would have won the Indianapolis 500-mile race at least once by now.
Oh, yes.
Because we all know his cars are certainly capable, and I think I am. And as you know, that's why Roger and I only lasted a couple years, because I went to Syracuse.
Did he tell you to give up the sprints?
We came to an agreement that I would not run any sprint races after I had been qualified for a Champ race. In other words, after I'd qualified, yeah, for the Indianapolis 500, I could not race any sprint races until after the 500 was over, or I could not run the night before a Champ race. So it worked out. Like I say, except for July 4th, it worked out.
Interesting, Mike, because even through all of that, as is the case that we talked about last night, for example, with Jim Herdebees, you know, drivers have ebb and flow in their career, and Gary Bettenhausen, even through some of that adversity, as we're going to hear after the break, Mike, there was still plenty of promise and plenty of positive pasture ahead in the career of Gary Bettenhausen.
It really was a turning point for Gary Bettenhausen. He tells a story. He told me this story at one point, just talking to him, where he said when he got hurt in 1974 and he got fired, he had a different mindset back in the 70s. He was very hard-nosed, very, you know, focused, very driven. And he was laying in the hospital and they were having the race that weekend and the race went on without him. And he thought, well, wait a minute, if the race is going on without me. And he really changed his life and he started enjoying other things more and started realizing, you know what, I'm going to start doing, you know, family things more and other things more. And it just really changed Gary Bettenhausen's life. And it led to, I think, what is his greatest drive at the Speedway. I mean, he led all those laps in 1972, but we're going to talk about 1980 in a few minutes. And I really think that's one of his truly great drives.
We'll take a look back on that great drive when we return to Beyond the Bricks.
You have a vision for what's next. Now, bring it to life. With UCF Online, you'll gain the skills to thrive in industries shaping the future. Because your next move isn't just a step forward, it's inventing the future you want. Your next move. Own it with UCF Online.
Beyond the Bricks with Jake Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
This is an Indy race car at 180 miles per hour. And this is what it looks like from the driver's seat. Pretty hairy. But here is one of the reasons the car behaves right. Monroe Custom Racing Shocks. Race drivers tell us when the shocks are right, you feel a difference. Again this year, every driver at Indy ran on Monroe shocks. Why? Monroe quality and engineering. So replace your worn shocks with Monroe. First in shocks. You'll feel the difference.
That ad from 1975 for Monroe Shocks Indy. Taking a look at the 70s and now turning the page a little bit into the 80s, talking about the great career of Gary Bettenhausen from inside the Hensley Legal Group Command Center. It happens. Hire Hensley. Jake Query along with Mike Thompson. We discussed before the break the fact that Gary Bettenhausen began his Indy 500 career in 1968 in a race in which he would start 22nd and finish 24th. Matter of fact, in the mid-20s, he was very familiar with throughout the 60s and into the early 70s. 1969, he finished 26th. Same, he would finish in 1970. Then a top 10 finish in 1971 before, as we discussed, that opportunity in 72. 1974, after a fifth-place start and finish in 73, Gary Bettenhausen would finish 32nd in the race. But another one of those drivers, Mike, as we now look in towards the 1980s, when talking about Gary Bettenhausen, one of those names that I think was nearly every year, one that would people would mention to look for, not only for a good qualifying effort, but I think there were many a year where people thought, this is the year where the Bettenhausen name breaks through.
Yeah, I mean, he was such a sentimental favorite, and so many people wanted to see positive results. It's interesting. One of the rides that we haven't really talked about with Gary Bettenhausen, I know that you like, Jake, is in 1977, if you recall, he drove that Evel Knievel-sponsored car. You know, so he had the Evel Knievel uniform, just like Evel Knievel wore in the famous Sky Cycle, where he flew over the Snake River Canyon and ended up in the drink, basically. So that was actually one of the rides that I think people remember really well about Gary Bettenhausen. But, you know, he did later in the later 70s, he didn't have a top ride, but he was there persevering every year. And people were, like you said, hoping this is going to be the year. And people may not remember that, you know, Gary Bettenhausen won several IndyCar races. This isn't a guy who, you know, went through his entire career and never won a race or anything. I mean, he won several races when he was with Roger Penske. And so, you know, he had a very solid IndyCar career as well.
I really did think in 1977 to get into the Speedway that he actually was going to jump over all of the RVs that are lined up. But with the Evel Knievel sponsorship, I guess it ended there, right? He didn't actually do on two wheels jumping over a bunch of school buses to get there. But by 1980, what he did jump over was a lot of the field. It was one of the great runs in the history of the 500, starting in 32nd and bringing the car home in third. Gary Bettenhausen on that incredible 1980 Indianapolis 500-mile run.
Right from the beginning, to go back to the very beginning, I didn't have a ride when the month of May rolled around. Yeah. Didn't know if I was going to have one. Came down the first weekend of qualifying, I stayed home here. I didn't even go because I didn't have a ride.
Gee.
And then the middle of the next week rolled around, and it was about 3 days before the last weekend of qualifying, and I had still expected Sherman Armstrong to call and let me to run the 46 car. Well, I was down at my shop working one day, and I took my little garden tractor and I went out and I rode a tilled. The kids have a motocross track out back, so I rode a tilled track all up, and I was working the track for them. Well, they were in school. I get to looking at the track, and I thought, boy, that looks like fun. So I went and got one of their bikes. Went out, and after about 20 laps, I thought I knew how to ride one of those things. Well, it finally pitched me out over the handlebars about 20 feet, and I landed right on this shoulder.
Oh, no, same shoulder.
And, oh, did it hurt. I came over and stood in the shower for about 30 minutes. About a half an hour later, the phone rang, and it was one of Sherman Armstrong's men. Said he wants you to come down and run the 46 car.
And the speed.
So, to make a long story short, I ate about a half a bottle of aspirin every day for the rest of the month, and
running very well.
I couldn't hardly get out of the race car. It hurt so bad, but then with the rain coming and at the last minute and saving me because I was the slowest qualifier in the field and I was next to be bumped, and the rain came and saved me, and then when the race started, I couldn't believe what was happening. I was going by cars on the first lap like they were stopped, and we were running 184 miles an hour in the race. So it just, the whole season went like that. It was just
from the last row in the starting field to the front row at the end, and you finish third. And what a thrilling finish, what a dramatic finish to the Champ Car campaign, Dirt Car campaign in 1980. You and Pancho Carter right down to the final race at Terre Haute. That's where you want it.
Yes, the season started out, and I beat Pancho by half a car length at DuCoyne, and by one car length the second race at DuCoyne, so it was like Pancho and I were side by side all season long, and it came down, like I said, last race, and I think I was 15 points ahead of Pancho, and which amounted to one position. If he beat me in the race, he was the champion. So, but Pancho had tire trouble. He blew a tire early in the race and lost several laps. So from then on, it was just a matter of having to finish the race, and things were going so well. Like I said, I ended up winning that one too.
I remember it well, obviously, Mike, Johnny Rutherford winning that race. But as we're about to hear from Donald Davidson, truly the story, or one of the big ones of that 1980 race, was the performance of Gary Bettenhausen.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was one of those interesting things because nobody really thought that this was going to be Gary Bettenhausen's greatest run, really, at the 500. And again, you look at 72, where he really had a chance to win. Yes, that's probably, you know, would be considered his greatest run. But you think about the finish that he had in 1980, coming from the last row in a car that was put together at the last minute, and he comes from the last row and finishes third in a car that he didn't really even think had a chance to do anything. You know, it's just an outstanding performance from Gary Bettenhausen, and really a legendary race, I honestly think.
Donald Davidson on that run in 1980.
By golly, the 1980 race where he got third is a great story, because Sherman Armstrong was trying to run five cars, and basically he and Paul Leftwood, the chief mechanic, said, look, you know, we don't have enough people to go around, but if you can get a crew together, the car is yours. So it was a four-year-old Wildcat, and so he gets Willie Davis and everything, and qualified in the back row. And it's funny how this works out, because there's other drivers that thought, I can win. And then there's other years where they thought, you know, this is not going to be the year. And then it works out well. So he actually came to the track that morning, and he told his wife and the twin boys, and whatever year they, you know, they were like 10, 11, 12, I don't know, whatever age they were at the time. And he said, all right, now just pay attention all day, and you know, listen to the PA. and be ready to go to the parking lot, because as soon as this blankety blank blows up, we're going home and we'll beat the traffic home. And he stays in there and finishes third.
Gary Bettenhausen won the 1980 and 1983 USAC champ dirt titles. But he told Tom Carnegie in that 1981 interview that we have referenced here over the course of this show that he was considering a career move that would never actually happen. Here is Gary Bettenhausen talking about, yes, indeed, hydroplane racing.
Hydroplane racing? You got to be kidding.
No, I'm serious. I really want to get into some boat racing and hopefully hydroplanes. In fact, I've been practicing a little bit.
Now, has this been inspired by your twins, Gary?
A little bit. They built such a good boat that I decided I'd like to drive it. You're the first one to know.
Mike, I think it's so interesting because when we talk about Gary Bettenhausen tonight, he represents, I think, so many different factors of a race car driver that we have seen at IMS in terms of family lineage and the pressures that can come with that, in terms of the desire to drive and race in just about anything that is presented to them, and also testing the boundaries beyond even where they have been. He represents so many different facets of the personalities of the people that we know that make this event what it is.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about this earlier on, but I can't imagine what the pressure is to be an Indianapolis 500 driver, just being a driver, and then to have the name Bettenhausen. And you're going in with that, the knowledge that your father was one of the true greats. I mean, Tony Bettenhausen was one of the absolute greats of racing, you know, didn't get a chance to win the Indianapolis 500. I mean, had a chance several times, but didn't win the Indianapolis 500, lost his life, test hopping Paul Russo, his good friend's car, in a year that a lot of people in 1961 thought this is finally Tony Bettenhausen's year. And that's the year that we lost Tony Bettenhausen. So then, you have all those family, you know, think about that, Jake. You have all these family pressures. And how many times have we heard it? My mom didn't really want me to go into racing, but that's the path that I went into after what happened to my dad. And that's what happened with Gary Bettenhausen. That's what happened. You know, Bill Vukovich II looked at racing as not necessarily, you know, he looked at it more as, hey, it's a great way for me to make a buck. I know racing, and my father was involved in racing, and it was a way for him to make a buck. And that's kind of how he looked at it. But there was a huge amount of pressure on Bill Vukovich II because, you know, he's carrying the exact same name as his famous father, who won the Indianapolis 500 twice and lost his life going for a third one in a row. So I think you're right. The pressure so intense on guys with a name like Bettenhausen, like Vukovich, you know, it's just has to be incredible. And it's going to be interesting as we watch. It just made me think about this when you said that, Jake. It's going to be interesting when we watch, you know, Sebastian Weldon, you know, Oliver Weldon, those guys coming up. They're coming up through the ranks, and I'll be interested to see, you know, they've handled the pressure so far so incredibly well. And it's so tragic what happened with their father, and they've gone into racing, and their incredible mother, Susie Weldon, you know, she's supported them every step of the way. And Susie Weldon, to me, I know this is a little bit off topic, but Susie Weldon to me is just one of those amazing people that, you know, she lost her husband in racing, and then you look at her and see how supportive she is of her sons in the same career. And you think, how incredibly strong can one person be? You know, Susie Weldon is one of those people that just absolutely amazes me.
Well, and
I don't know how you feel about that.
No, I would totally agree with that. And the strength to be able to be back at the racetrack, right? I mean, I've known Susie from before that took place, obviously, and then seeing her, you know, at different races throughout the course of the year. And you are correct. I mean, giving her sons the support of what it is that's important and what it is that they want to do. And also, I think at the same time, Mike, and this is an important aspect of it, and that is the, and I'm not a parent, but I think it is a parent, pardon the pun, that also, while giving the support to, and we'll use the Weldon boys as an example, but also letting them know and having the understanding that it's not that that's what they have to do. That if there is something that they decide to do elsewhere, or they decide that racing is not for them, that that also is understandable, not only from their family, but from fans as well. And I think most people would understand that. That doesn't appear to be where that case is going, but you never know if either one of those two decides that they want to pursue another passion. And I think that the same thing happened with, I never got the impression, although I was not covering the races back then, but certainly through word and through the archive of it, I never got the impression that Gary Bettenhausen, nor his brother Tony, nor their brother Merle Bettenhausen, that any of them raced just out of obligation. I think they were doing so because they had a true love and passion for the sport. And I think about, Mike, often the 1991 Indy 500, which was, you know, a fabulous race. And when you think about the number of the elite level drivers that were in that race, and yet within the intro of that race, the famous Paul Page Delta Force intro, one of those elite drivers that is mentioned as a viable candidate to run up front of that race is Gary Bettenhausen. And it is mentioned even then, you know, trying to fulfill the legacy that eluded his father in winning the race. So the pressure was there, the expectation was there, but so too was the recognition of the fact that at that point he was riding and driving as his own man with his own skill set.
Well, that's right. And a lot of people might not remember in 1991, that race you just brought up, Gary Bettenhausen was the fastest qualifier that year. He did not sit on the pole, but if you rank the cars by speed in 1991, Gary Bettenhausen was the fastest qualifier that year. And so he was absolutely a threat to win. Now, he was driving one of the Buicks, and we all know about the issues with the Buick's reliabilities and things like that. But Gary Bettenhausen was absolutely a threat. And you know, we were talking a little bit about, you know, Gary Bettenhausen's versatility. You know, he won all these sprint car championships and things like that, and he was so great on dirt. He won champ dirt titles and things like that we were talking about. But one of the things I think people may not remember is the last race, and I kind of jokingly brought up the Evel Knievel car, but the last race that Gary Bettenhausen drove in that Evel Knievel car was at Mossport, which is the road course up in Canada. And Gary Bettenhausen finished second in that race. And so, you know, Gary Bettenhausen was versatile. You know, he could run on road courses. You know, he wasn't a threat to win every week on a road course, things like that. But I mean, he finished second in that race, driving that King for, you know, the Agajanian car, you know, for the Evel Knievel sponsorship and things like that. So I just think when you look at Gary Bettenhausen's career, a lot of versatility. We talked about the fact that he drove in NASCAR, drove a few races in stock cars. And I, you know, it's just one of those guys that it's fun to talk about people like that who had such diverse careers and doing all of that with the pressure that was on him. And he was so, you know, in the interview, we played all these different clips was with Tom Carnegie in 1981. He talked about how much he loved, you know, living in central Indiana and the house that he had built, and they kept adding on to it. I didn't play the clip, but he talked about, you know, every time I have a good race in sprint cars, or, you know, over the years, or every time I had a good race in champ dirt, I add a little more onto the house. And you can tell how proud he was of living in central Indiana. So, you know, somebody who was really proud of what he accomplished and his family and all the legacy that they had built.
The 1992 Indianapolis 500 featured Al Unser, Danny Sullivan, Bobby Rahal, A.J. Foyt, Ari Leyendijk, Mario Andretti, Emerson Fittipaldi, Rick Mears, Gordon Johncock, Tom Sneva. There were former winners all over the field of that race, and yet starting within the front two rows, one of those in the Buick, Gary Bettenhausen, in what was another year that many may have thought that was going to be the year that he would break through. But that car of course, involved in an accident midway through the race on lap 112. Gary Bettenhausen would finish 17th after starting 5th. But no doubt, one of the great drivers, one of the great men to run at the Indianapolis 500. It's been our pleasure tonight taking a look back at Gary Bettenhausen.
Agents who are realtors do more than open doors. They have the ethical expertise, market data, and tools to bring you home. So when looking for a home, look for the R and work with a member of the National Association of Realtors. They're right by you.
Stay ahead in the fast-changing world of retail and commercial real estate with From Where I Sit, hosted by ICSC President and CEO Tom McGee. Each episode brings you conversations with top industry leaders, offering real-time insight into the trends reshaping our communities. From the future of the office market and AI's impact on real estate, to experiential retail, supply chain innovation, and emerging opportunities for growth, follow From Where I Sit, available wherever you listen to podcasts.